For those of you who were here since the beginning and you're concerned that, you know, you don't want to go and wash your hands every few minutes and you don't want to wear the mask for the human exposure and you're going to do the social isolation aspect in order to protect yourself and you don't have to worry about any records that resulted because of it and you don't have to think about all the federal regulations and you're just going to put yourself in a little office, close the door, lock it, and deal with you and your computer, right? Oh, well. We are now going to move into the realm of cyber threats and what you might have as a point of exposure in relation to that. I'm here with my colleague Beth Mastro, who will also be speaking on the second part of this, and she's worked very directly with our state policymakers in relation to some of this. For those of you who worked in public health for many years, and it looks like a few of you in the crowd may have the many years along with myself in your mantra, and looking at the three dimensions of trying to affect policy change, doing education to have your total environmental change to affect the best public health practice, and you think you're going to, you know, when you're young, you think you're going to accomplish all of that very quickly. And then reality strikes and you know that it's a multi-year ongoing process of you chip away with bits and pieces. And so what we're going to be talking about this morning are the bits and pieces of chipping away at something, and particularly something that is a really new topic for people to be addressing, especially within schools, because as we know, most of the policymakers, most of the people who are within administrative roles in schools are kind of my age range. And the issues that we're addressing are ones that they really are not too comfortable doing. What am I pushing here? That see, I'm doing technology because I can't do it, right? Okay. I also want to acknowledge my co-authors on this, Joachim Larte from the New York State Center, and he did all of the youth-based focus groups that had to do with this piece of the project, and Maureen Cahill from Southern Westchester Board of Cooperative Educational Services in Westchester County, New York, and she worked with us on the pilot implementation pieces of this. And this all started with an initiative we did with the Prevent Institute at the University of North Carolina, CDC funded, and Lenora Olson from the University of Utah, just to acknowledge, was our coach along the way with this and commiserated with us as we went through that process. But we worked with them over an 8-month time period on some of this basic development pieces, and also acknowledging from the New York State Department of Health the Act for Youth Assets Coming Together for Youth, which is a youth development initiative that helps support some of the educational aspects of what we were doing with this. Just to give you the objectives of what we're trying to accomplish is recognizing the prevalence of cyber threats in schools, identify challenges and barriers to implementing a statewide policy, and then discussing key strategies that schools can implement to prevent cyber threats. So some of you are probably wondering, what are cyber threats? So here it is. Cyber threats: online material that can raise concern about violence against others or self. They may be direct threats or allude to threat or harm to self or others. Sometimes they're suicidal based, so they may be directed to self as well as those that are directed outside. So we looked at probably the biggest study that was done was through the Pew Internet and American Life Project to look at what level do youth really see that they are having some exposure to threats, and 58% of kids admit that someone has said mean or hurtful things to them online, and 32% of all teens say they've been targets of potentially menacing online behavior. Probably the most common of what we've heard about is cyberbullying. I'm sure all of you heard of cyberbullying, and you hear about the classic cases of somebody being cyberbullied, and then that's what makes the high headlines. And some of the factors of cyberbullying, it make it particularly unique and different from bullying per se. And we were just asked about input on state policy and bullying, and this allowed us the opportunity to bring the cyber language into the state policy thinking with this. Cyberbullying, unlike bullying, is a 24/7 proposition. There are no closed door hours. There are no times you can just go away and be away from people who are bullying you. There is that potential 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for it to be exposed, to have that exposure. There also is that lack of personal contact, which would indicate that the perpetrator has the ability to inflict on someone else without that sense of empathy. You don't see what your response is. So it's really depersonalizing, and that way making it almost a little bit more hurtful and onerous in terms of what it does. And it can also go to millions of people in an instant. If we know the cyber world, you can, you know, click and have a message out to tons of people. And there, it's really hard to follow up and have consequences associated with it, and that's part of our issue and our problem. The different types of cyber tools, just to kind of give you the laundry list of what might fall within there, and I think many of us in this room can look at this and say, I use a cell phone. And I go on the internet, and we may not be very conversant with social networking groups. We probably don't travel in MySpace, Facebook. We probably don't have our own avatar and are on Second Life. We probably do not take on some of those actions that there are a few younger members of our audience who probably are very accustomed to and familiar with, and this is a regular part of their life. And that barrier is one of the issues and problems in and of itself. One thing we find with schools is our biggest barrier is teacher knowledge. As I've just said, most teachers are now 50 years and above and are getting near to that retirement time. And the concept of integrating something that is really foreign, I mean, come on, I couldn't even click the button, right? You know, it becomes very difficult to be able to change the way practices happen, to effectively integrate the tools of technology in a means other than turn in your document on as a Word document and send it to me via email. Most have gone to that point, but they are not necessarily doing webinars, podcasts, using wikis in the classroom, etc., which is sort of the next level to where that makes it a challenge to try to implement a policy associated with it. Also, if some of your states may be like New York, where we are a local decision-making state, where everything is state-guided but absolutely locally decided, that makes it very difficult to do state policy and say everyone will do it in this way. Another, people may be familiar with Children's Internet Protection Act. Is this language everyone's familiar with? Yes? No? No? Okay. Yes, some of you, yes. Children's Internet Protection Act requires schools to define protection, put in place protection measures if they want to receive the E-rate, which is the federal reimbursement rate for technology, and most schools will want to receive that rate. They have to put filters in place, and many of them respond by just doing an all or nothing. They just block out. Like most schools we work with will just say, we don't allow MySpace, we don't allow contact to any of these places. Yet there's a lot of educational value to that intersection and interaction with those places, but their response is to do it just in that way. Also, there's this perception on the part of schools that we find is that all of this is happening outside the school. So what the heck can they do? It's not happening during school hours. Maybe the cyberbullying is occurring in the evening, and so even though it translates into action during the school day and conflict that exists, they perceive that it's not something under their purview. And their method for collecting data related to incidents is not really such that it is taking account of the cyber arena. So I'm going to turn over to Beth now to talk to about some of the strategies in relation to the cyber threats.
We also thought this morning that there was a chance of us up here outnumbering you all, so I was a ringer in the audience. Just to move then from some of the challenges, as Mary said, chipping away on some of these things, the first thing that we've been able to work with schools that might show some effectiveness is, in New York, the requirement for all schools to do school safety planning. So as they look at their prevention and intervention planning, linking with the required technology committees to then have that scaffolded approach to cyberbullying. Are students and adults who use the technology, are they well informed of your policies? Do they understand the ramifications? And are you looking to educate them about that? Then even going further, looking with some schools to actually establish that policy. Many schools, I think it was mentioned earlier, the problem of a template going around and everyone saying, okay, here's my template. You know, I don't know if you remember Mad Libs, but it was like, you know, insert name here. And so we actually got some plans that said, you know, we the school district of blank say this. Well, no, at least put your name in there so that we know you looked at that. And then so making sure that it's established and constantly updated, because as you know, it moves fast. Technology moves very quickly, and nothing can say more about you're looking at policies than to have outdated language even within a year. once you have established it, you have a current policy, the critical thing is to let everybody know this is the policy. New York State has a requirement for codes of conduct, making sure everyone knows what is the accepted behavior within a school. And that's not just the old students' rights and responsibilities. That's everyone who comes into a school building, visitors, parents, the established code of conduct and the consequences for not meeting that code or for breaking the code, and making sure people know that in terms of it's not just you find out that you didn't abide by the code because you're suspended for 3 days. It's making sure that everybody knows it. And one of the people that we believe also should be one of these critical stakeholders is including your custodial staff, because that's somebody who knows your assistant principals. They often know the disciplinary issues and the kids that come before them every day, but somebody who really knows what's going on in the building all the time is your head custodian. Then also, as Mary said, Joachim Larte, our colleague, has worked with youth focus groups. As you saw Mary in the clicker, I'm sure later there'll be something I have trouble with here, but you know, nothing will disengage youth more than you talking to them and it being clear that they know more than you and what can you show me. But have them be part of your education team. Have them be talking to people about what is safe use of the internet. Even how do you safely set up a MySpace page? How do you, those kinds of things, so that they're helping get that message out. Then integrating cyber tools, as Mary said, using things in the classroom, making sure it's just normative. It's interesting to kids that you're using this technology the same way they might use it. One of the things that came out of the report also, and from the focus groups with kids, is that even though you do hear about the high-profile cyberbullying, probably you've seen some of the YouTube events where kids, you know, did videotaped fights and put them up on YouTube. Those high profile. Think about it, though, in terms of the high saturation of use, and how many of those do you hear, and how much are kids actually using cyber tools? And most of the time, they are using it for their homework. They really are using it for positive educational experiences, but we do need to have in place policies that deal with unsafe use. Again, also making sure that people know what is a confidential method to report something that's going on. As Mary talked about earlier, there are issues in New York State's data collection methodology, which actually lumps all bullying together, so there's no way to call that out. But part of it is that, as with other bullying behavior, sometimes people are afraid to report it. So establishing a confidential way to report incidents without someone feeling like they're going to get kicked off the computer or those kinds of things. So some of the issues for consideration that we also are working with the schools, one of the things we kept hearing was, well, we feel pretty good about it because we've got filters. And who better and more quickly can get around your filters than your student body? So there's this false sense of security. It doesn't filter all inappropriate contact. I'm sure you've heard of the BOSS key. We work with the State Education Department and we do site visits to schools, and I can't tell you how many times I've been in the library and seen the BOSS key go, where immediately the screen disappears and whatever they were initially looking at now looks like math. And so there's not always all inappropriate content is blocked. It doesn't prevent cyberbullying, because there are many ways of doing that, as Mary showed you a non-exhaustive list of methods to do that. Also, the other problem with the filters and the blocking technology is that it actually can prevent kids from doing the research that they want to do, and there is an inherent bias of blocked content. Who's deciding what gets blocked? There was a school where there was a lot of research and discussion around transgender issues, and all of that content was blocked. So who decided that was something that couldn't be discussed and couldn't be researched on the thing? So the other thing is, if you block it and they can't go there, it doesn't help kids practice or build those skills for safe navigation. Also, you probably have heard of some of the cases where You're looking at constitutional issues of free speech. You're looking at monitoring. You're looking at some of the privacy issues that were discussed earlier, balanced with just unlimited access in the school. Then, in order to look at some of these issues, a recommendation that local schools look at developing a review team that does, it may be representatives from your safety and local or technology acceptable use policy to review if a situation happens, what do they do about it? And then individual issues, again, making sure that if you're the one approaching students about this or others, that you get in there and you use the technology. And one of the ways that we have recommended is going to something like Second Life and creating your own avatar. I did it, and I have to say it kind of weirded me out a little bit. But at least now when I talk to kids about it, they're like, oh, you did? You know, which makes me feel really old that they're like, oh, you did it too? And but just so that you at least have dabbled in it and have enough that you're relevant to the folks you're trying to talk to about safe use of it. One, quickly just to tell you what we've done, we spoke with other state centers for school safety. We talked to other states about, did they have language? Very few do have language about how to address cyber threats. We have worked with policymakers at the state level to integrate cyberbullying into some of the violent incident reporting requirements, at least in terms of awareness level in training about it. It's not called out as a separate incident. We've worked with administrators and school boards associations, and we've also done the student focus groups. We have drafted sample policy guidelines, again, so we want to make sure that we don't have that cookie-cutter approach, but helping schools look at aligning it with the No Child Left Behind persistently dangerous requirements and our requirements for persistently dangerous schools. And then we have a group of stakeholders who are reviewing the draft policy to see if it's feasible and makes sense at the local level. We have selected schools, urban, rural, and suburban, to pilot these. We haven't done that yet, probably by next school year, and we will revise and feedback and as based on their feedback. And then, as Mary said, it's pretty much ongoing. So just those are a few quick resources for you, and thanks.